Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back. We are on episode number
121.
And we are on chapter 15, text number 12.
Very nice. Mm-hmm.
Any quick recap of the last episode? Very quick.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they could just go listen to the previous chapter, you guys.
I love it.
Yeah. I love it. Just go listen to it.
Just go listen to it.
Invocation, please.
Oh my God.
Yeah, let's do that again. I feel like we were in a rush.
Okay, I was ready to bulldoze.
I know, that was great. That was great. Okay.
Om Gyana Timirandasya. Yananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation: I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them.
I mean, just like, get it together, people. Like, go to the past episode. No, I'm kidding.
All right, well, let's do this. Text 12.
All right.
Pradakshini. Very nice.
Krishna is still speaking. And he says, the splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this whole world, comes from me. Mm. And the splendor of the moon and the splendor of fires are also from me.
Mm.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know what's so interesting? It's like there's also like these demigods, right? Surya Dev, which is the sun god,
right.
And Chandra, which is the moon, and Agni Dev, which is the fire god. But like literally he's saying again, he's doubling down, like Krishna is everything, which means he's also these demigods. He's also the energy of all of these things as well. The sun, the moon, and fire, some of the most powerful things in our world.
Can I put it in an odd example?
Yeah.
Okay, so Krishna is like a mother who gives birth to the light of the sun and the light of the moon, like the primary source. The source, yeah, like of these personalities, okay?
Krishna birth fire.
Yes. And the moon and the sun. And,
I like this.
Right, like
this
that analogy. Idea.
Yeah, I'm into it. Yeah.
And then like
not weird
Surya
at all.
Dev.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, these things are personalities that represent.
Well, I was thinking more about the planet because my analogy is a little interesting. So you can fix it. No, this is where I'm going with it. So Krishna birth, the sun, the moon,
right,
fire.
Yes.
Okay, just the things.
Yeah.
The spark that lits them. Does that make sense?
Lights them, yeah.
Anyways, moving on.
Okay. She's from Venezuela. It's fine.
Wait, did I say something?
No, right? It was cute. The spark that lits them. It lights them.
Lights
but
them.
It lit. It. They're
it's
pretty
just like grammar.
I hear it.
No,
okay.
But keep going.
Okay.
It's very cute.
Okay. Anyways. And Surya Dev and like these demigods that are in charge of like taking care of these planets are like, if Krishna's the mother, these are like the babysitters.
Totally. Okay. I like that.
That's you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like they're the ones managing it, but Krishna birthed them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the planets are the kids and the demigods that are in charge of the planets are the babysitters.
Yeah. But like
love
really
it.
High and mighty, wonderful babysitters.
Yes.
This is not a matter of putting them like, oh, they're not good. No. Highly qualified, amazing. You know,
I love how you said that part in an accent. Oh, they're not good.
I don't know why I did that.
Strong. They're still very strong like bull, you know?
Yes.
That was actually the accent. I don't know why. You know,
okay, I like it.
It's interesting because here in the purport, Prabhupada says that in this text, Krishna is giving the hint how we can come back to Godhead back home. So you might think, how is this a hint? But then he elaborates further in the purport saying, if we can really understand the light and splendor of the sun, moon, and fire, they're all emanating from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, then one's Krishna consciousness will begin. That's what it is. It's consciousness or awareness of Krishna and how Krishna is in everything. Everything comes from Krishna. There would be nothing without Krishna. So if we can connect, we've talked about this before in the chapter that was like, Krishna is this and that and this and that. So when we look at all of creation, we're inspired to think of Krishna and develop deeper Krishna consciousness.
For sure. I mean, it's one of the first questions that people existentially ask. Mm. Like where did we come from?
Yeah.
How did we get here? How does this all work? Mm. And all of those kinds of questions. So just those kinds of questions lead to asking the source of all sources, which is Krishna. And then we can understand our position, who we are, what our goal is, what we're striving for. So yeah, definitely.
I love that Krishna's in this mode in chapter 15 where he's like, okay, now let me tell you about me now. And it's kind of, he started with the three of the, I think, some of the most magical parts of existence. It's like, you ever see like a really good sunrise or a really good sunset? Or like in Thailand, I went to a full moon party and it was like a blood red moon. And just like all of these things are so magical.
Yeah.
And so beautiful. And you can feel the profoundness just by looking at them.
Because that's Krishna's effulgence.
Yeah.
And isn't that fascinating?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The sunlight is due to the spiritual effulgence in the spiritual sky of the Supreme Lord. So like when you're feeling that magic, it's Krishna. Mm. Right? Yeah.
Beautiful.
Not just because he created it, because it's what emanates from him. Just like when we feel the most happy is when we're around people who are happy and emanate happiness and emanate goodness, you know?
Yeah. You know, starting with text 12 to 15 now, it's chunked up into a section that basically talks about how Krishna assists us in our material existence and our spiritual endeavor. So we are going to be talking more about Krishna. While in text 7 through 11, we talked about our bondage, transmigration of the soul. And then text 1 through 6, we talked about attaining liberation by detachment and the upside down banyan tree. So what you said, Shama, Krishna's looping back to talking about Krishna, absolutely, starting with text 12 to 15, about him and how he assists us in our spiritual endeavor.
Not just the spiritual, because I think also Prabhupada makes a big point here, which he reiterates in the next coming text where he says, without Krishna's... So basically, Krishna creates fire, moonlight, and the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So to please the living entities. And without his help, and without their help, like the moon and the sun and the all of this, no living entity can live. So basically, without Krishna, our existence, not just because he forms us, but he forms everything around us that sustains us, would not be possible.
Totally. And the line right after the one you read, Priya, Prabhupada just, it's cute almost how he writes, these are some thoughts to provoke Krishna consciousness in the conditioned soul. Just throwing these out there.
Just some light thoughts.
Yeah.
All
right.
Text 13. Oh, sorry.
No, that was good.
Shama Sangeeta.
Perfect. Text 13. Krishna says, I enter into each planet and by my energy, they stay in orbit. Ooh. I become the moon and thereby supply the juice of life to all vegetables. This is the biggest flex that is in this entire book where Krishna's like, dude, I keep the planets in orbit. Have you ever heard any holy book in any tradition where the God character or whoever it is like literally like I keep the planets in orbit.
The God.
Wow.
The God. You
the
know
God
what
character.
Mean?
That was so funny.
You know what I mean? Like this is such a like a humble brag that I just I absolutely love like that Krishna can do this and then he's saying it and he's spelling it out in this book, right? I don't know. Yeah. I'm just blown away by this.
Totally. It blew me away too. And specifically because I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Krishna does everything. So duh, of course. But how he does it is so fascinating, right?
Ooh, could we all read a line of the purport? Just take turns reading just the first part of the purport on this page.
Sure.
Just
go for it, Shamali.
How he does it, it's right here.
Yeah, sure. Start us off.
It's understood that all planets are floating in the air only by the energy of the Lord. Priya.
The Lord enters into every atom, every planet, and every living being.
Wow.
That is discussed in the Brahma Samhita.
It is said there that one plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, enters into the planets, the universe, the living entity, and even into the atom.
So, due to his entrance, everything is appropriately manifested.
When the spirit soul is there, a living man can float on the water. But when the living spark is out of the body and the body is dead, the body sinks.
Yeah, I think that's so fascinating.
Yeah, I think I read extra line that didn't have to do with anything. I'm so sorry.
Brit and I looked up at that point and then we both looked at you.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I just kept reading. And like the whole point of why you want us to read out the window.
No, it's okay. It's okay. No, it's good because I feel like in that moment it clicked in my brain to a different degree, right? We say Krishna is in everything. Krishna is in every living entity. And living entities are atoms. They're plants. I mean, there's atoms in plants and people and there's all these molecules and all these things. And Krishna is in everything. And basically without Krishna's existence, nothing could really, you know, live.
Wow. Yeah.
Everything would just sort of sink and not function.
And exactly.
And it's not just like rocks in the sky. Like these planets are not just rocks in the sky, no. right? Like the earth sustains 7 billion souls, right? The moon literally gives juice of life to all the vegetables, controls all the water, controls all of the water inside of us. Like there's so much power mm-hmm. in every single one of these planets. Mm. And Krishna is doing all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. By his strength, power, energy, all moving and non-moving things stay in place. That is crazy That's to really think about. Cool.
It is fascinating. And I love how Prabhupada ends the purport here. He says, everything becomes palatable by the agency of the Supreme Lord through the influence of the moon. So specifically, like they're pointing out, like through him being carrying the moon, we get wonderful, tasty, healthy vegetables and everything is palatable. How would you explain palatable?
Yum.
Digestible.
Digestible.
Yeah.
Yum, yum.
How many yums do we have to add to make it palatable?
So but basically what you're saying, Priya, is crazy to think all of human society is only working and able to live comfortably and enjoy food because of Krishna. The supply from Krishna.
Yeah.
And if it weren't for him, all the planets would just scatter like dust in the air and perish.
Specifically because of his role in as Paramatma in every living thing. Does that? Yeah. Make sense. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, exactly. Because Prabhupada says all the planets floating in space, that's just because of the entrance of the supreme energy of Krishna. His energy is sustaining each planet like a handful of dust. So if like someone throws that dust in the air, there's no possibility of the dust falling. But if one throws it, if someone holds a handful of dust, there's no possibility of the dust falling. Oh, okay, right. But if one throws it in the air, it'll fall down. So the planets which are floating in the air, they're just held in the fist of the universal form of the Supreme Lord. Ooh. But if he just throws it up in the air at his will, that's so powerful to think of, just like he's
marbles.
Holding it there.
They're like little marbles. He's like, whoop.
Like at any moment, if I wanted to, they could just go.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's wild. Yeah. But this is such a cool verse.
This is.
Yeah. By my energy, they stay in orbit. Wow.
Fascinating. I think it keeps getting interesting.
Yeah. Anything else from this purport?
No.
No, that's
all
good.
Right. Shamali.
Oh, nice. I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, ongoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuffs. It's interesting. You were going to say?
No. I would say, I think the first few lines of this one is also really interesting.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So it says, according to Ayurvedic Shastras, so the knowledge of Ayurveda, we understand that there is a fire in the stomach, which it digests all food sent there. When the fire is not blazing, there is no hunger. When the fire is in order, we become hungry. Yeah. Sometimes when the fire is not going nicely, treatment is required. And that was actually my exact position. When I went to get the same treatment that Shama got, but I got it in India, Panchakarma, they said that I needed to work on my digestion. My digestion was weak. And I had to do all these different things. And they are saying, once you start getting hungry, you know you're healthy, that your digestion is going well.
Interesting.
And that's all because of Krishna.
Wow.
And that's wild to think about too.
And fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities. That is pretty cool.
And in the West, they don't really have a conception of seeing digestion as a fire, which actually has very practical ways of thinking about it. Like when you wake up, you don't just want to throw a bunch of heavy foods in your stomach when the digestion, they're just like small embers. You start with something like hot lemon water to cleanse it and to alkalinize the system. Then maybe like boiled apples is very Ayurvedic. Mm-hmm. So you eat that, like little things that slowly starts building the fire of digestion rather than whatever, wake up and eat lasagna.
Right.
Which I have done that before. Yeah.
I think
the
we
best
all have at one point or another in our lives.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, when you're binge watching shows, I don't think you're thinking, my body is a temple. And
my digestive fire must take care of it.
Right. But it's crazy to think of that digestive fire as Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it says, unless the Supreme Lord helps one in digesting, there is no possibility of eating. Mm. So not only does he help us with making sure the moon can provide our well-being in terms of the, you know, the water vegetables in our body, but the vegetables that are grown and all of these things. But also, even if that was working without him, right? Even if we got nutrition and vegetables from the moon without his direct interference, our digestion wouldn't be able to be it like functioning without him.
Yeah.
So even if there was a bunch of vegetables, but Krishna wasn't there in digestion. Yeah.
We couldn't eat anything. Wow. Yeah. It is crazy to think like Krishna is like fire. We have a fire of digestion. So we are not digesting food independently. Our eating process is even being facilitated by Krishna.
Yeah.
That's literally the three verses. Like, yeah. Krishna's like, I am the moon. I supply vegetables. I am the digestion in your body.
Wow. All connected.
Wow. All connected.
Yeah.
And it says, I love that.
The Lord is situated within sound and within the body, within the air, and even within the stomach as the digestive force. So everywhere, everywhere, he helps everything.
And there are four kinds of food stuff. Some are drunk, some are chewed, some are licked, and some are sucked. And he is the digestive force for all of them.
I bet you Priya and I did not highlight that, but you just wanted to read that for one reason.
Literally.
That's the moment. Show the book to the camera. That's the one sentence you highlighted.
Licked and sucked. Yes. That is the one sentence that I
think Priya was hoping you wouldn't say why you highlighted it.
Everyone knows. Everyone who's been in this journey with you knows why you read that sentence, but you didn't have to say it.
No, I'm just a big fan of the four kinds of food stuff.
Right. Okay.
Krishna is everything.
Krishna is everything. Beautiful conclusion.
Oh, God. Of course. Okay. Well, text 15. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas.
This is a powerful text. Remembrance and forgetfulness. Everything comes from him.
Oh, yeah.
So we've talked about this. Krishna has said that he's in the heart, right? Mm-hmm. So he doubles down and he says it again. I'm seated in everyone's heart. Now, this is the fun part. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
That can have a very practical application, just like we know reincarnation happens and it's very intertwined with karma. So we forget everything that happens in our past life, and we have to act according to the direction of the Supreme Lord, who Prabhupada says, who is witness to all our work. We've read before in past texts, I am the master, I am the witness, you know? So therefore, we begin our work according to our past deeds, and required knowledge is supplied to us and remembrance is given to us by Krishna. But we do have to, you know, forget our past lives, because that's a little too heavy if we remember everything.
Yeah, but Krishna is so merciful that although we forget, he gives us the intelligence to renew our work where we ended it in our last life.
Yeah.
Right? So he's like, okay, imagine it, you could not handle 10,000 lives that you've lived, whatever many.
And knowing every single thing that you did in every lifetime.
Every mistake you've made, how every connection to everyone you've had. Because, you know, there's some karmic people in your life. Imagine if you knew that in a past life you stabbed them. Mm-hmm. How would you handle it in just one lifetime ago,
and
right?
And just knowing that you stabbed them in a past life, and at any point they're going to stab you back. How terrifying is it to live like that? Yeah. Oh my God.
That's a crazy thought.
I'd be paranoid.
Exactly. So Krishna's like, you know what? We're not going to remember that, but you did make a bunch of progress in your spiritual life. So here is the advantage. I'm going to put you in a situation with a certain mood, with a certain desire for knowledge that fits where you left off in your previous life.
Yeah.
You still have to live out your karma. That person might still stab you, but for the time being, you can continue making spiritual progress.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you can continue, you know, in your path.
That is very merciful, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And that shows such a reciprocal relationship, because here Prabhupada says, if we're really serious about understanding Vedic knowledge, then Krishna will give us the required intelligence. And that kind of makes me think of what we talked about in texts 3 and 4 about there's two paths to achieve Krishna and to achieve liberation, jnana and bhakti. And through jnana, we're doing a lot of endeavoring to finally get there. But if we start off with bhakti and just surrender, Krishna will give us the tools, give us the intelligence, the remembrance to know how to navigate it. We can just kind of bypass everything and he'll show us the easier way.
Yeah, totally. It's fascinating. I think the first part I liked about this purport is, so Krishna has been telling us, I am the fire, I am the moon, I am the sun. Because of that, you get food, you get nourishment, you get all of that. I am digestion. I am the controller of you being able to be nourished and all of that. And then he's like, I'm also in your heart. And I've been telling you all of this all along, but I'm also in your heart. But not only that, but I'm also in your mind if you acquire knowledge, right? So like he's everywhere. And I was thinking about like the main things that control our body, right? And they say like we have two brains almost, like our stomach is one of our brains and then our brain is another brain. But like the things that control our body are our heart, our brain, and our stomachs. Right. In a general sort of sense, right?
Right.
And Krishna is in all of them, right? In one way or another. But we still have free will, and that's where the mind comes in and how we control the mind, right? Whether it's our best friend or our enemy.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, that's good.
So,
and you know, Prabhupada recaps a little the previous text, like, okay, we know Krishna's worshipable not only as the impersonal Brahman, we talked about he's also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we talked about he's also Paramatma in our hearts, in every atom, but now Prabhupada also says he's also the form of incarnation, he's also as the form of the incarnation of the Vedas as well. So we're talking about this knowledge that Krishna will give us if we surrender. And the Vedas offer the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of Krishna. In his incarnation as Vyasadeva, he also was the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra. So it's interesting because the final sentence in the purport of this text, Prabhupada says in this verse, the purpose of the Vedas, the understanding of the Vedas, and the goal of the Vedas are clearly defined. And it all comes down to Krishna.
He's the one, he is the knowledge. He is the one that shares the knowledge. Mm-hmm. He is, how do you put that all into one thing,
you
right?
You know, like from Ted Lasso, football is life. Krishna is life.
Krishna is life.
That's how you put it into the sentence.
I love that. I'm still kind of hung up on, like, this is so beautiful. Mm. Like Krishna is the Vedas and the compiler and the knower of the Vedas. But I'm still kind of hung up on this, like this notion of like, we don't remember anything from a past life, but Krishna gives us, like if we began to love Krishna in a previous life, he brings that love back to our hearts so we can continue that journey of loving him.
Yeah.
And that is the only thing that we can, that he helps us remember.
Right.
And that's kind of a beautiful thing.
That is. It really is. I mean, very benevolent.
Mm. Yeah. And so unlike in the material world, anything you put into your bank account dies with you, but into your spiritual bank account, Krishna's like, you can keep it. It's always yours eternally.
Yeah.
Ugh, powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Text 16.
Yeehoo.
I don't even know.
I don't know. Priya, do you want to start?
Whatever? Is it me?
Yeah, sure.
Why not?
Okay. Sure. Ahead, sure. Priya. Why not? There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible.
Interesting.
I'm like, Krishna, what the heck? Why are you jumping from you are everything and you're in our hearts and then all of a sudden to this? But I'm sure he'll tell us.
Can I say one thing? We're starting an important set of verses because how I said 12 to 15 was how Krishna assists us in our material existence, spiritual endeavor. Text 16 to 18 is the essence of Vedanta. It's the Trisloki of the whole Gita.
Yeah, he actually does say that here. Prabhupada says, here the Lord is giving, in summary, the contents of the Vedanta Sutra. He says that the living entities who are innumerable, so many, can be divided into two classes, the fallible and the infallible. Shama Sangeeta, do you want to tell us what fallible or infallible means?
Fallible means capable of making mistakes. So infallible, one moment please.
Will mean exactly the opposite?
Will mean incapable of making mistakes or being wrong.
What is infallible and what is fallible?
Infallible means incapable of making mistakes.
Okay. Infallible would be the opposite.
Capable of making mistakes. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Bravo.
So we are all fallible.
Right.
Yes.
But when we connect to the spiritual dimension, because Prabhupada says, those who are in oneness with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, are called infallible.
Nice. Yeah, like when you go back to Godhead, basically.
Right. And oneness doesn't mean that they will have no individuality, but that there is no disunity.
Yeah, we are like-minded.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so can I just read this with that new definition? So there are two classes of beings, the ones who make mistakes and the ones who don't make mistakes.
Yeah. By nature, that is their position, the constitution of who they are.
Gotcha.
So us in the material world, we make mistakes. Why? Because we have all these desires and the karma and the blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
I have a lot of that. You nailed it.
But those that have reached, you know, like Srila Prabhupada and others who have reached the spiritual world, they have no further thing to make mistakes about because their hearts are so pure that there's no desire that they have. There's no attachment that they have. They're just so sincerely looking to love Krishna.
I like that.
And that's the thing that makes everyone so connected in the spiritual world.
Mm. I've read this verse so many times and I have never looked up the definition of fallible and infallible.
Isn't that funny how that moment. Works? When you read it alone, you're like, okay, I understand.
Yeah,
it well
I was
enough.
Like, fallible. Of course, obviously, everyone knows what fallible means. Obvs. Obvs. But now it's like literally, yeah, people, there are two classes of people, one who makes mistakes and one who doesn't. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm. Yeah, super fascinating. That's mm-hmm. really cool. Okay. Shamli, anything else you or Shamasangita?
Mm. No, I'm just reading how, like, you know, towards the end of the purport, Prabhupada recaps the struggles, you know, the living entity in this world. We struggle with the mind, the senses, material bodies. Everything's constantly changing and we're conditioned and our body is changing with matter because matter is constantly changing. But, you know, if we're able to connect to the spiritual realm, I think we can also live that that spiritual reality, even while in the material world. We don't quite need to reach the spiritual world just yet to be living as if we were there, you know? Mm.
As if, but I don't think we can be
not fully
infallible here.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally.
Sure. Yeah. We can aspire as much as we can to live as though we are in the spiritual world with the mindset of being kind to everyone and focusing solely on Krishna and doing devotional service and all these practices in bhakti yoga, but we can't pretend that we are faultless at this point.
Yeah.
And in the spiritual world, there are no changes to the material body too. Mm. There's no old age, there's no birth, and there's no death. Mm. They're all exists in oneness.
Oneness, yeah. Wow. Unity.
Yeah, and I think that also, I mean, makes for less suffering, less everything, right? Like, it's just like a... just a peaceful place.
Yeah. That sounds so nice. Just take me there again.
It does sound really nice.
Yeah.
But it takes so long, my Lord.
Five stars.
Okay, yeah. Text 17, Shamasangita.
All right, Krishna says, besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the supreme soul, the imperishable Lord himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. What?
Yeah. I mean, duh.
Okay, besides these two, meaning like the two classes of beings,
like
right?
Fallible and infallible.
The mistakes people and the non-mistakes people, right? Besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the supreme soul. So the one that's Krishna. Inside all of us, right?
Right. Right.
Or is that Krishna?
Krishna.
Okay, that's Krishna.
Yeah. Prabhupada says the purport is that basically among all living entities, both conditioned and liberated, there's one supreme living personality, the personality of Godhead, who maintains them and gives them all the facilities of enjoyment according to different work. So according to our desires.
But he does say this supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, Paramatma.
So, perfect.
So Krishna in everyone's heart.
Wunderbar.
So it's like you exist,
the mistake people exist, the non-mistake people exist, and God exists.
I'm a non-mistake person. Who are you?
I'm definitely a non-mistake person.
Really introduces themselves like that.
Hi, I'm non-mistake person.
that's like if you guys seen the Good Place.
Yes, yeah. I love
like
that.
The main character who pretends like she belongs there. I belong in the Good Place.
I'm a non-mistake person.
Don't question me.
Okay, so Krishna is also maintaining the three worlds. What is the three worlds again?
Great question.
I forgot. I mean, I think I knew it, but I forgot.
Like the lokas,
all of the three. You know, you like, hear it 100 times.
What are the three worlds?
I feel like there must be some listeners right now face palming like, come on,
they're
girls,
like, you guys have
together.
Already talked about this. Why do you not know?
We're having
a communal brain fart now.
Let's just chalk this up to be a brain fart. We know this. We are non-mistake people.
Yeah. So, but basically Krishna has entered the three worlds and he's maintaining them.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes. What is the three worlds?
Spiritual world.
That's what I thought that.
Duh.
Duh.
Material world?
Material world.
Duh. Cool.
Duh.
Duh.
And then
duh.
There's like, there's an intermediate world.
Say what?
And this refers to living beings who are spiritual by nature, but conditioned by the material world. These jivas that have the choice to either remain bound in the material world or seek liberation and return to the spiritual world. But that sounds like
us.
Is
that like heavenly planets?
So let's come to this world. 1 second, let me think. I think it can be.
You know, I don't know if we have time to answer this. I think we'll
come back to it.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah. We'll come back to it. But
like material, spiritual, and the in-betweeners.
Yeah.
The non-mistakers.
Totally.
Yep.
That's but exactly the point is, Krishna is maintaining all of these worlds.
Yes.
Okay.
And a wise man who can understand Krishna is eligible to attain perfect peace, not others.
Oof.
But doesn't that sound dandy? Perfect peace in this chaotic
honestly,
world.
Honestly, that's all we're looking
that's
for.
That's all I want.
It's just peace. That's all we're looking for here.
You know, whenever my sister, like she has in the past suffered with anxiety and different anxiety attacks. And whenever she is going through in the past, especially a lot more than now, when she was going through an anxiety attack, she would say, I just want to go home. I just want to go home. Like home was a feeling of a place. So that always was interesting.
That's
we're like, you are home, Brindy. You are.
Aww.
And she's like, no, I'm not.
She sounds like a non-mistake person. Like she just put in the wrong like world.
She was. And she always says, I'm just a girl.
I'm just a girl.
We're all just girls.
We're all just girls. All right. Okay. Text 18, Shyamali.
All right. Because I am transcendental, both beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that supreme person. I love how factual Krishna's just like, I'm the greatest. Here I am. I'm neither fallible nor infallible because I'm just beyond all that. And I am the supreme greatest.
He's like, mistakes? What are those? What? Actually,
I invented
never. I invented them.
Never heard of them.
If I made them, I can't actually make them. Uh-huh. Like I can't make mistakes because I created them.
I made them, but I don't make them.
Exactly.
I love that.
I'm so tickled by that statement.
Right? It's fascinating.
It's good. It's good. Yeah.
You know, Krishna just called himself the goat. Are you guys? Which one?
For the youngins, what does it mean?
It means the greatest of all time. Yeah, and he literally said, "Because I am the greatest," and Krishna is the goat.
He is the goat.
The ultimate divine goat.
Shama, how would you say this whole text, but using like lingo for kids?
Okay.
Cool kids lingo.
Cool kids. What is happening?
Help me out if I stumble. Okay. Yeah. Because I am transcendental, because I'm like, I'm like giving God.
Okay.
I'm like giving God-like.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I'm beyond like the people who make mistakes.
Like
and
cap. There's no cap.
There's no cap. Oh my God, I'm too old for this. I'm beyond the mistakes, no cap.
Yeah.
And because I am the goat, and people cheer me on from this world and in the Vedas. How do you say Vedas?
Like all the knows, you know, all the knowing, like it's just like,
that probably
like
sounds
some,
right.
Some something like that. Anyways, we're
it's
not
giving knowledge and it's giving supreme person.
Ah, boom.
He is the greatest.
You
of
did
all
it.
Time.
Yeah.
You did it. That was awesome. That was awesome.
Anyways,
this is really cool.
Krishna's
like
just like, yeah, these are facts.
These are facts.
He's like, I'm not being arrogant.
No.
This is just something you have to know.
And you know what's so crazy? Is like, this is the first time he has said something just like so confidently, like, because I am the greatest. Like he has literally, how many verses are in this book? Like 800 verses?
Probably.
And this is like the first time he's like, I'm the greatest.
I think so, yeah.
And like, if I was God and I wrote this book, I would be like, I'm cool because of this. I'm great because of this. I did this. And I would go on and on if I was God.
I mean, he kind of does. He just does it in different ways. He's like, I have all the knowledge. In fact, I am the knowledge.
I created knowledge.
But like, he like,
and I created a mistake.
He spells it out in this verse, you know?
Yeah. In this one, he's very clear. I am the greatest.
Yeah.
Period.
How cool.
The confidence is very attractive, actually.
It really is.
It's very nice, you know?
Like, okay, Arjuna, understand finally once and for all. I am the greatest. I've said enough to back that up.
Yeah.
And here it is, as it is.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love a confident God. You know?
That's very
cool. Totally.
That's very nice.
I love a God who can dance.
I love a God who can dance. Mm-hmm. Oh.
A confident God.
Yeah.
A kind God.
Wait, anything else in this purport?
Nope.
I mean, it spoke for itself, really.
It really did.
Okay. He's the greatest. I get it.
We understand.
I love it.
Whose turn is it to read?
I think it's yours.
Wow.
I know. Look at that.
Let's do this.
Oh, wait. Did we ever? I think I said this quote before. When you say God who can dance, there's like a Friedrich Nietzsche quote where it's like, I would only believe in a God who could dance.
Mm,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I love that too. It makes him personable.
Yeah.
Aww, yeah.
And he's also arrogant in a great way. Like, not really arrogant, but like, he's just very self-aware.
Mm-hmm. We've said this before.
Yeah. He just knows what it is. He knows the facts.
Yeah. So basically, we're about to leave the essence of Vedanta, these past three texts, 16 to 18, and we're entering 19 to the end is to know Krishna means to know everything.
Mm. Ooh, okay. All text right. 19.
Chamali.
Priyadarshini. That's okay. You know, thank you.
Priyadarshini. My name is Priyadarshini. Who knows?
Sorry. I love you, Janai. I love your Priyadarshini. Do you know where that's from? Well, maybe that's
I've heard. Oh, is it Forrest Gump?
Forrest Gump.
I love you.
I love you, Janai.
Okay.
I love you, Priyadarshini.
That's such a good movie. That's
great
such
movie,
a
right?
good movie.
Anyway.
It's been a long day.
Yes.
This is the best episode.
We got this. Text 19. Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O son of Bharata.
Ooh, can you repeat that one more time? This is a really big one.
Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O son of Bharata.
I love this.
Facts on facts.
There are moments. There are moments like when I'm having like a rough day, I like sit down in front of Krishna in my altar and I literally say, Krishna, I don't know anything. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. This day is crazy. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what I'm doing in my love life, in my career, all of these things. But I know that you got me and I know that you are going to take care of me. Like knowing that he is the be all end all, the X factor, like that is the only thing that I know for sure, because the rest of my life is just in ruins. And so like, you know, like those are the moments where I'm like, I don't know anything, Krishna, but I know that you are everything.
And that makes you the knower of everything.
I mean, this is technically, you're right.
It's just like, I didn't say it, you said it.
You said it. You facts on facts on facts.
Facts on facts.
That's so real.
I mean, I think the overall, this is a recurring theme of the Bhagavad Gita, right?
Yeah.
To know Krishna and to understand Krishna is to really understand everything that we need to know.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada says, in the Vaishnava parampara, so in this lineage of gurus and students, and so teacher, student, that we've been having from basically starting from Krishna all the way down to us as students, it is said that if one is engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, there is no need for any other spiritual process for understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth. So it's like, you know, Krishna saying it, he is everything, he has all the knowledge, and Prabhupada's reiterating it.
Reiterating.
Can't say words right now.
Reiterating is a hard word.
Yeah, that this is the path. This is the best way to understand everything.
Yeah. Prabhupada says the imperfect knower goes on simply speculating about the absolute truth, but the perfect knower, without wasting his valuable time, engages directly in Krishna consciousness, service to the Lord. So throughout the whole Bhagavad Gita, as you mentioned, Priya, this fact is stressed at every single step. Like, we may have doubts about things, because in the text it says, without doubting, if your heart's in the right place, Krishna's going to give you the intelligence and the knowledge. Because we may have doubts, we may have pockets of like, you know, I don't really know that. Mm. But if we keep in the right mood of surrender, Krishna's going to give us the tools to find our way back to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Facts on facts.
Facts on facts.
All right. Shama, text 20.
Oh my God.
Is this the end?
This is the end. The last verse of chapter 15.
Oh my God.
So excited.
All right. Okay. Krishna says, this is the most confidential part of the Vedic scriptures, O sinless one. And it is now disclosed. It is disclosed now by me. Whoever understands this will become wise and his endeavors will know perfection. Wow.
What does that mean to you? What do you think of when you read that?
Oh, man, this is literally like the secret of life, you know, like Krishna is everything. And if you know that, everything in your life will begin to make sense. And this is the most secret thing. People are striving. People are having existential crises every single day of their life because they're trying to figure out this one thing and what we're supposed to be doing here and how we're supposed to build a relationship with Krishna. Literally existential crisis after existential crisis. But this is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Beautiful summary, because it absolutely is building off of the previous text where it's saying this, to know Krishna is to know everything. That is the most confidential part.
Yeah. I also find it really interesting. I almost glossed. Speak today.
That's okay.
Glossed over this part, but he calls Arjuna, oh, sinless one. And I thought that was really interesting because the whole premise of this is that Arjuna is quote unquote in our position, right? Of like not being sure what to do and, you know, being fallible. Right?
Yeah.
But Krishna is saying like, oh, sinless one. It just made me really curious about Krishna's perception of his devotee. Right?
But did he become, oh, sinless one after he saw the form and was like, okay.
Oh, and he surrendered?
And he surrendered. Right?
Well, Prabhupada says here in the purport, the word that Arjuna's addressed is significant because it means, oh, sinless one. And that means that unless one is free from all sinful reactions, it's really hard to understand Krishna. We have to become free from all contamination, all sinful activities, and then we can completely understand Krishna. And that's why devotional service is constantly stressed, because it's so pure and potent that once we engage in that, we automatically get to that stage of sinlessness.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so curious about Krishna's perception. I'm sure we'll learn more about that because this is the first time he's called Arjuna that, right?
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting.
There's one. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's the most impactful part for me for the purport was the next following sentences. And it basically, Prabhupada breaks down this chapter, right?
Yeah.
And he says,
do it in a loop.
Sure. We can do it in a loop. I'll do the first one. While one is performing devotional service and the association of pure devotees in full Krishna consciousness, there are certain things which require to be vanquished together.
The most important thing one has to surmount is weakness of the heart.
The first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature.
Can we stop there for a second? Which I just like feel like we should, you know, so basically he's saying the biggest problem is weakness of the heart. And the first symptom of that, or like how you know that is happening, is you have a desire to lord things over the material nature. You want to control things.
Yeah.
The moment that is happening, you are exhibiting signs of weakness of the heart.
Yeah. Ooh. Very good. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thus, is that where we are?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, thank you. Thus, one gives up the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. So when that happens, we don't want to serve Krishna.
The moment we think we're in control. The second weakness of the heart is that one increases the propensity to lord it over material nature. What?
Keep going.
Okay.
No, you.
Sorry, I didn't read increase. Go ahead.
No, that's still the same sentence.
Oh, it's the same sentence. Sorry, I can't see anything.
Do it again. Okay, you got this.
The second weakness of the heart is that one increases the propensity to lord it over
that
material nature.
As one.
Sorry, there's no lighting here. Oh, no. Okay.
As one.
Okay, wait. Hold on. Let me start from the beginning. Reading is hard right now. The second weakness of the heart is that as one increases the propensity to lord it over material nature, he becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter.
Beautiful.
Period.
Oh, you got it.
Words, man.
The problems of material existence are due to these weaknesses of the heart.
Yeah. So the second one was, once you want to control everything, the second stage of that is you are super attached to material possessions and matter, just things, things in general. And these two are the problems of material existence, and these are signs of weakness of the heart. And I've never seen that phrase, weakness of the heart, but I've heard many times people say like, we got to cleanse our hearts, right? Maybe it's covered and it's really hard and we got to make sure that we can see the softness and goodness that is in there, right? Super fascinating way of expressing that thought process.
Yeah, I like that. Can we go back? There's one part of the purport that really I think is so beautiful. And I've heard it said before in like motivational videos. So it starts off by saying, wherever devotional service exists, the material contamination cannot exist. Priya, do you want to read the next line there? And then Shama.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I threw you in with that.
It's like, I got it. Devotional service to the Lord and the Lord himself are one and the same because they are spiritual. Devotional service takes place within the internal energy of the Supreme Lord.
Mm.
The Lord is said to be the sun and ignorance is called darkness.
Where the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. So where there's Krishna, there is
That's
no darkness.
So sweet.
I love that. That's this was really a sweet. Really cool chapter.
Yeah.
Very, very cool chapter.
Very unique. Well, I guess this is how I perceive it. Very unique because it was very split into different sections.
Yeah.
It was very like, here's what I am. Here's how I'm here for you. Here's like very, you know?
And when I read it by myself, like years ago, I was like, this is a very erratic, chaotic chapter. But now it kind of makes more sense to me.
Yeah. It makes sense and it goes well together.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, chapter 15 is part of the, you know, how the Gita can be chunked into the first six, the middle six, the last six, how to live, how to love. And this is part of the how to let go.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Guys, we did it.
We did
chapter 15.
Yeah. This is really cool.
Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport to the 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of Purushottama Yoga, the yoga of the Supreme Person.
Love it. All right. Please join us next time for chapter 16, The Divine and Demoniac Natures.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.